The following podcast contains explicit language.
If you heard last week's episode, you might remember this guy.
Joining us from Maryland is Randy, 38, and a marketer.
I'm a writer.
Hi. Okay, sorry.
Get it right.
But your day job, right, is marketing?
The day job is marketing, but I'm a...
Don't quit your day job.
Writing professional specializing in humor.
Clearly.
I said in that episode that we have history, and it's true. Randy's a weird guy, but I love interviewing him for this podcast. It's like that bad boyfriend or that bad friend that you keep trying to end things with, and then you forget what they did wrong, and then you just take them back anyways. That is Randy for me. I keep having him back on this show, even though he's creepy. But today's show is a side of him I like. It's the story of his very first kiss. This is YOY. I'm Andrea Salenzi. Randy grew up in rural Maryland, in an old farmhouse next to a new subdivision, next to a new mall. He was raised by his grandmother, who he calls Mima. One summer when he was 13 years old, he was forced to take to his bed. He had a nasty infection on his foot.
I kicked a fire ant colony to impress a friend, Eric, and I just totally forgot about it. By the time that I ended up looking at it, noticing and smelling it, it smelled like an old ketchup bottle or like a belly button that hadn't been cleaned in a while.
I don't know what that smells like.
Well, not good.
He spent that whole summer in bed just waiting for it to heal.
So I was bedbound. I would look out the window and I would see the kids of the neighborhood play.
All day long, just staring out the window.
It was almost like I was just watching a TV show.
One girl caught his eye.
And she was like a tomboy, so she insisted on me call it Mel. And really cute. I think she was like 11 or 12, but like an old 12.
Randy liked her look. She'd wear faded jean shorts and band t-shirts.
She was starting to get her buds. She was budding.
Okay, like she's starting to develop breasts.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone knew it.
Finally, Randy had the chance to go outside and join the neighborhood kids. Mel noticed him limping, and she asked about his bandaged foot. He told her there was a fight.
So I told her, some guy called me a bunghole in the food court in front of the sub supreme, which we call the sub standard.
He told that story over and over again.
They had sub sandwiches, but cheap tuna bought in some Chinese country.
And it worked.
And she said to me, do you want to come swimming with me? And I said, sure. She had her own pool. Her father was kind of rich. And I said, yeah.
It was a perfect day. They jumped in and splashed around. Mel was wearing a blue Minnie Mouse bikini. A distant boombox was playing the Soup Dragon.
Like I said, it was just really innocent. We ended up in the pool and we kissed in the shallow end.
Mel was shivering a little, her lips bright pink, her face streaked with suntan lotion.
And that was, you know, that was the first kiss.
Randy will never forget the details of that kiss.
Well, I would think about it all the time. It's like I thought I had been a good kisser and she had been smiling and I thought it had gone well.
School was starting in a week, and he was planning to ask her to be his girlfriend. He made a list of all the movies he wanted to show her. He wrote instructions for sneaking into his room when Mima was watching television. But soon it was clear. Mel wanted nothing to do with Randy.
I would try to get in touch with her. I would try to say hi in the hallway. She would completely ignore me. So at that point, I said, like, what is the one thing this girl would be really impressed by? I mean, the one thing.
Right.
How can I get her back?
Concert in her yard? Making her a craft?
Think again. Magic.
This became his plan to win Mel back at the fall talent show.
Other acts are out there, and it's my turn, and there's this really loud bang. And then Casey and the Sunshine Band's I'm Your Boogeyman Blast, which was my absolute favorite song. All right, so that was my cue. So I run onto the stage, and I'm wearing a red and white cape that my Mima had fashioned from old sheets.
Wow.
Bed sheets that she had had, and there was a strawberry shortcake image on the back, and I was wearing a large hat for my dead pop-pop, and a wand, which was something my Meemaw just put together. It was just a ruler painted black. And the place is going crazy. I mean, people are laughing, they're screaming. You could tell that they thought it was amazing. So at this point, I say real loud,
Mel, where are you?
And then her friends start to point to her. And I said,
come up on stage. You are the lucky person who's going to be my assistant.
And she's acting all embarrassed, like, oh, man, you know, why me? But you could tell that she was secretly pleased. You know, she had like a little twinkle in her, like a little smile in her eye. So she gets up there, and I'm going through my warm-up, my patter. And I said to the audience, like, well,
what would you all think if I told you I had a rabbit in this hat?
And I show them the hat, the back, and the front. And they're going haywire. The audience is going crazy. Like, even Miss Thompson, who hated my guts, even, like, she's smiling. Like, I once told her she had horrible breath.
A lot was riding on this trick. This trick would win Mel back.
Then I gave the hat back to Mel, and I whispered,
on the count of three, pull the rabbit out of the hat.
So I go,
one.
And everyone's joining in. One. And I said,
two.
I said, two. I said,
three.
And it was in three. And then Mel pulls the rabbit out of the hat. It was a rabbit I had found in the creek behind my house the week before. And then people started to scream. Mel starts to cry.
The rabbit was just hanging there.
So what happened was the rabbit was dead, and for some reason it was bleeding.
It was bleeding?
It was bleeding, and I don't know why. I think it suffocated, but I also know that it was a creek rabbit, and a creek rabbit is not like the type you would buy in a pet store. This is not a healthy rabbit. So I do think that it has suffocated before the show. So the audience is going crazy. People are running up on stage, grabbing the rabbit, like trying to see if it's fake. It's like, no, this is a real rabbit. So Mel runs off the stage. She's weeping. But that's not really why Mel's family became mad at me.
In a moment, we'll hear what Mel's family thought about Randy. But first, while I have you here, we're looking for more folks to write us reviews in iTunes. All you got to do is visit iTunes.com/YOI. We're so new that basically any little review, any tweet, whatever works for you is going to make a huge difference for us. So please do your magic at iTunes.com/YOY. And thank you, really. After the rabbit incident, Mel's family got involved, and they told her to stay away from Randy.
Yeah, I'm sure they were saying, like, he killed that rabbit on purpose, which I never would do.
Mel lived in the nicest neighborhood in town. Her parents looked at Randy like he wasn't good enough for their daughter.
I think I came from an area that they weren't happy with, you know, because I grew up around dung.
She was an uptown girl, and you were a downtown man.
I don't know.
Randy couldn't get over Mel, and I have a theory about this. I think for him, a first kiss wasn't just lip contact. It was the first person who'd made him feel special, like he was chosen by them. I told him my first kiss was during Spin the Bottle, and Randy interrupted me. That's not a first kiss. That doesn't count. The bottle chose you. To him, his first kiss really mattered. It might have been one of the only good things that happened to him that summer, maybe that year, maybe for all of high school.
At that point, I'm thinking, like, what do I need to do to impress Mel? At this, like, a tomboy like Mel, what does every girl want to be, even someone like Mel? Deep down inside, honestly.
Princess? I don't know.
Exactly.
Really?
Yeah. So I thought, I'm going to turn Mel into a princess. Literally, I'm going to turn her into a princess.
Aw.
So this time I was deeply into imaginary worlds, you know, like Narnia and Oz. So since I was a real young kid, I had been creating my own imaginary world called Zingia.
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 No, Zyngia, Z-Y-N-G-I-A, but over the I, there's the double dot.
Okay.
All right. So I thought, I am going to make her a princess, the princess of Zyngia.
Your imaginary world.
It wasn't so imaginary. I'd been writing about it for years. So I was the king of Zyngia, and I'm a short, I'm not a wide.
Randy remembers a lot about Zyngia. He spent a lot of time back then, writing out legends he calls the Zyngia Chronicles. Here are some of the basics you need to know.
There are two big groups down there in Zyngia, the Wides and the Shorts. And the Wides have been fighting the Shorts for eons over a slice of magical forest called Renfruck.
Why can't the Wides and the Shorts get along?
The Wides grew up in a different area than the Shorts.
But there's
a million differences.
Are they physically that different from the Shorts?
Totally different. Like, think Jewish and Arab. It's a weird world. Like, it snows upwards. People talk backwards. The guards, the Renfruckers, are magical, but they don't have much patience. They're like hotheads. I should also say that I was the best king this place had ever seen. Like, I opened fast food restaurants down there and hotels. Rock festivals I opened up down there. I killed the previous king, who was a real loser. He slept all day in his castle and just played with himself, and it was really ugly. His name was Bennett. And I created him too. But then I killed him off. So at this point, it was an important point in Zyngia's history. And I thought, who better to lead us into the next eon than Princess Mel?
Mel's chapter in the Zyngia Chronicles was 12 pages long with a few crude drawings. Randy was proud of it. Of all of his legends, this one felt the most mature. So one morning before the sun came up, Randy walked all the way to the 24-hour Kinko's in a nearby strip mall. He photocopied Mel's chapter, as many as he could carry, and with that box of copies, he walked along the interstate highway to his school. It was early.
Like, really early. Like, even before the black janitor got there.
And then Randy walked from locker to locker, sliding copies in each one. Once his classmates arrived, they were all reading about Zyngia.
And I can tell they're just shocked. Like, how did a kid who's so quiet, how did he literally create another world?
Randy was sent to the principal's office.
So I get down to the principal's office, and he just tears into me. He's saying stuff like that I had gone beyond the bounds of this, and I went too far, and this is ridiculous, and you embarrass her. And I said, you know what? Where's Mel? She can tell you what the purpose, why I did this. Where is she? And he said she went home, that she threw up and then had her mother pick her up.
I'm so confused because, like, what did the story say that she did other than just that she happened to be the princess?
Well, the problem was that I had written some romantic scenes. And one in particular took place in a stable on a bed of hay. That was really the scene that caused all the problems.
Was it explicit?
It was. It was serious Zyngian sex action. So,
but how much did you honestly know about sex at 13? Was it just he touched her buds and?
Well, I described her vagina as being like the fiery gates of Zamolov, which in that world is it's their version of heaven, but it's also their version of hell.
Randy seemed to think that the inaccuracies in this story about sex and anatomy got him in trouble. But that's not it. It was all the sex stuff he got right.
I wrote a scene about us going bareback horse riding through the woods, and I fell and I broke my leg, and she fixed it, and then she kissed my penis. So the problem, too, was that the kingdom, it was populated with a lot of other girls in the school. Like, one girl soaped me down every night in a stall, and I performed a magic spell on Rebecca Tyler, who was a girl I had a crush on in math class, and she would do whatever I want. So she would give me a hander, like, in the morning. So I mean, this was the type of thing. And then,
how,
like,
did you know what a hander was?
You just know about that stuff. And then I would also have, like, my friend Buzzy in one scene was looking on. You know, he was like peeking out, and he was looking at me getting a hander from Rebecca Tyler, and he was laughing. So I think that was probably the start of the problem. So what after that? I was told, like, you can't do this again. This isn't appropriate.
But that was just the beginning.
Every once in a while, I would write a new chapter and, you know, lose it, quote unquote, in the hallway. And then someone would find it, which is what I wanted them to do. And then they would Xerox it and would go around the school again. And then Mr. Jenkins, the principal, would say, like, oh, passing them around the school. And I would say, not me, Mr. Jenkins. I must have lost it, quote unquote.
Since talking with Randy, I called up Mel to confirm the details of this story. And though she didn't agree to be interviewed on tape, she's okay with me summarizing our chat here. She's happily married now, with two kids, living far away from Maryland. She says yes, she believes she was Randy's first kiss, but he wasn't hers. There were a few guys from the neighborhood who she'd invite over for a swim. But then her mom found her diary, and all that freedom was over. More curfews, more Sunday school, and she's grateful for that. She also told me about a pretty disturbing incident that happened their senior year. While she and her parents would sometimes see Randy walk by the house, kind of glancing in the windows, this time Mel's mom spotted him sprawled out in the front lawn. He was wearing black socks and a straw boater hat. And nothing else. He was crying.
What happened was I dropped some acid that my retarded friend Benji got from his younger brother. And for some reason, at that point, I began to believe I really was living in Xinjiang.
Mel's parents called the police.
And then my meemaw got me out of jail, and I lied to her and said something like, I have the flu or whatever.
Mel remembers being grounded for what he did. She even missed her prom. Because no matter how many times she told them she hadn't provoked Randy, her parents never believed her. They thought Mel had been sneaking off on dates or calling him. Mel blamed herself for that summer in the pool with all the kissing. She feared the power that her body could have over men. When she was packing for her first year of college, she filled her suitcase with sweatshirts. If you could talk to her today, what would you tell her?
I would tell her I still love her. Well, she was my first kiss. You always love your first kiss.
When Mel signed up for Facebook years later, she received a friend request from Randy. She thought she'd blocked him, but then a note showed up in her messages folder. It said, "I'm sorry, I was just an idiot kid. But I still could kiss, right? What a dummy. He should have just stopped it, I'm sorry."
You know, a lot of people might see me now and might be surprised that I had problems in high school. But I think it was a good lesson. And I think that by going through that, it just helped me with women later on.
At 38, a confident guy with a job and an apartment, good looking, dating comes easy to Randy. But as his friend, I have to tell you, Randy loves a lot of things. He loves his meemaw. He loves Don Henley. He loves this place in Ocean City, Maryland called Club Secrets. But I've never heard him talk about anyone like he talks about Mel. Even if he never figures out how to treat her like one, she's definitely his princess. But the summer is gone. But the summer is gone. That's it for today's show. If you want to see what a creek rabbit looks like and read the Xinjiang Chronicles, we made you a special website. That's Xinjiang.com, Z-Y-N-G-I-A. It's amazing that was available, Xinjiang.com. So we have original artwork there from the New Yorker cartoonist, the wonderful Liana Fink. That's all at Xinjiang.com. Our producer is Lindsay Cradwell. Our editor is Hillary Frank from the podcast The Longest Shortest Time. Our artwork is by Teddy Blanks from Chips.nyc. Theme music by Andy Miklas. We also use Creative Commons music by Lee Rosever, Nylor, and Michael B. Fort from the Free Music Archive. Lots of folks have chipped in this week to help with our new show, including Mike Sachs, AC Valdez, Jason Gambrell, Hans Bilger, Alana Milner, Faith Smith, Margaret Kelly, Sarah Bentley, Ian Pexa, and Cameron Drews. Thank you also to Laura Mayer and Andy Bowers at Panoply. Next time on YOY, we head outside to convert some new listeners.
Unlikely you'd want to speak to me because I haven't got a relationship.
You must have some people in your life, friends or neighbors.
Just my wife.